afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care if it's afternoon where you are, it's afternoon where I am. And welcome once again to Zwei Null, the TLG Gwent podcast. My name is Jagras, and I'm joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Spiro. How's it going, Spiro?
Hey, Jagras. Not going too badly. We're also going to be joined here today by someone I'm sure you guys have seen many times in the past, Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me.
And someone who you may not have seen, but has been prevalent in, you know, especially things that are happening currently. Super Spock, you might have seen his name in the previous qualifiers for the TLG Invitational. Hey, Super Spock.
Hello, hello. Nice to be here.
And yeah, speaking qualifiers and the Invitational, I guess that's our first talking point because this episode will focus a little bit on community tournaments. So the Invitational being a tournament run by Team Leviathan Gaming invites players from all sorts of different teams. And there was also a community qualifier. We've also then had the qualifier to knock it down to top 16. And Super Spock, what a run, my friend. So came through the community qualifier, beat all the scrubs in the community, and then went on to face off against, you know, the best of the best in Gwent and has made it through to the top 16 qualifier this weekend. How are you feeling about that?
I feel pretty good. It was quite the time going through the community qualifier and then again a few weeks ago. Very fun, and I'm happy to be in the top 16.
Yeah, that's quite an impressive run all the way from the qualifiers through the Swiss stage. I believe it was 7 rounds of Swiss, actually. It was quite a long Swiss stage, so definitely a long journey you've had to get to the top 16. And I mean, journey's not over just yet, obviously. You've got a few more games to go, but I'm looking forward to seeing your performance as well as the others in the last stage in this weekend.
Yeah, the last round of the Swiss stage in particular was quite the doozy. I believe it was 2 ties, a PC crash, and then and finally 2 games after that to decide it. It was a very, very long series.
I hate ties. As a caster, I hate ties. I don't know how players feel. Like, do you mind a tie? I guess if it's a game you were like close to losing, you're favored and you're close to losing, you're probably like, yes, a tie. Whereas if you're like, you know, you almost won it and it's an unfavored matchup, you're like, God damn it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit weird. Especially when you have to like replay them. I think I almost don't mind ties as much if it's like it counts as like a win for both. But if I have to replay it, it can be interesting. Go either way, I suppose.
Yeah, I think I prefer a system where it, like, both players get a point. But, you know, I understand why it is the way it is. Just as a caster, it's like, right, we've just cast this game and we're going to we're going to say all of the same things all over again. and then hope for a different outcome. So in terms of community qualifiers and community tournaments, do you feel like you have a different strategy for those sorts of tournaments in terms of your lineup compared to, say, something like on ladder? Or do you feel like you tend to play very similar lists on ladder to in community tournaments?
I would say for community tournaments, I definitely try to look at lists that are more, beneficial in certain coins. And ladder, that's something you can't really control at all. So I would say that's definitely something I look to first. And then I also decide like decks based off of like how much I enjoy them. That's another big part in what I choose, as far as my lineups go.
When you say decks you enjoy, do you mean decks you're comfortable or decks you're actually comfortable playing, or do you mean decks you actually just enjoy?
A little bit of both, I would say.
It's interesting.
Yeah,
I'm like, exact opposite. I'll just play whatever wins. I don't care what I'm.
Oh yeah,
I just want to win.
At some point in the season, I also just say, screw it. I'll just play like whatever. but usually, at least to start, I always try with like whatever I feel the most comfortable with. It's a deck that's like been around for a while that I have a lot of experience with. I'm like, okay, I can pilot this to the best of my advantage. But in some metas, yeah, if there's an obvious top tier contender, I'm just gonna yeet and skeet go with that.
See, Spiro, the reason why you're probably so toxic, I'm gonna say it, is because you play decks that don't make you happy. If you play decks that make you happy, then the Reddit post would be much
more. I mean, sometimes it coincides, right? Sometimes the deck that makes me happy is also a top tier deck, but there's a lot of the times where it's that they don't really align. But yeah, especially in tournaments, I kind of just want to go with whatever I think is going to win. Although that's not to say that decks aren't always interesting. Sometimes there's some interesting decks for like tech choices and some interesting lineups. But I think that's an interesting argument, though.
As a competitive streamer, you know, there's a toss-up between playing the decks that you enjoy and trying to compete at the highest level of the game. And you have to make a judgment call as a streamer. Do you prefer to be competitive and play those decks even if it's not, you know, your most positive? Or would you rather play like memes and shoop and nonsense for fun?
I have a very simple solution to this. When a new expansion comes out, a new patch, that's when I try all the gimmicky stuff and all the memes and all the fun stuff in the beginning of the season, because that's when everyone's trying stuff and everything's fun and everything is different. And then as the season gets towards the closing points, that's when I kind of go, okay, now it's time to climb and then, you know, start playing real decks.
Real decks. I like that. As if like anything else is imaginary. But speaking of, I guess, community tournaments, we'll go to Ryan for this one. How do you feel that the broad range of community tournaments that you have, we have benefit CDPR and benefit Gwent as an esport?
Oh, I think community tournaments are very beneficial to us because they not only give like players a chance to compete without having to, I guess, put in the same amount of effort that it needs to take part in the official Gwent Open and Gwent Master Series, because that is very time consuming. But if you feel like you enjoy the game a lot and you want to be more competitive in the way you play, then I think these kind of community tournaments are a great starting point, or you don't even have to go beyond those, because I feel like what the community provides is already so nice. There's so many regular tournaments. There's even leagues where you compete weekly and where it isn't just one event. And I think the diversity and the amount of community tournaments we have is great to see. And I always like when I get an email or something where someone asks us like, hey, we're planning this new I think there was actually one last week where I got an email from someone from Brazil where they said they actually founded a new team, like a Latin American team, and they are starting a new tournament there and asking if we can support them in some way. And I'm always happy to get those kind of messages, because it just shows us that there are always new people interested in the game and interested in also playing it more competitively and challenging themselves.
Yeah, I definitely like that. Allows players from various different skill levels to try out, you know, get dip their toe in the competitive scene, try out, try to play. It's also quite fun for some of these players. So like you play one of these community tournaments and you end up game one going into like someone like Pyeball or a big name, and you're like, you know, people that you see in like Gwent Opens, people you see in Masters, and people who you never like think you could play against, but you actually get a chance to, you know, kind of just play against them and see how you do against them. It's I think it's quite exciting for a lot of players as well.
No, even big streamer names that appear in some of these community tournaments, where as a viewer maybe, or as a player that likes to compete and plays a lot, you get to prove yourself on the big stage. Maybe your opponent even streams the game and you get a nice highlight reel of your misplays, or even better, your five head plays.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a really good point, that for some people playing against these players, like that's not going to be like the highlight of their day or the highlight of their week or whatever, having that experience of like, oh my god, this is the person who won this, or this is the person who I've seen do this. And there is, it's weird to say it, like a level of celebrity, but within the Gwent community there's definitely members that people look up to, that they enjoy watching as streamers, that they respect, and having that experience of interacting is really meaningful. And that's something that community tournaments bring that doesn't necessarily exist outside of that. Do you play a lot of community tournaments, Spock?
Yeah, I would say I play in a fair amount of them that I've been going around. I started to dip my toes into community tournaments around fall of last year during the Elder Blood series. And since then, I've always kind of kept an eye out for tournaments that are being run in the community.
So, I also like that the community tournaments have, there's so much variety. Like you have some that are more serious. You also have, there's so many different formats. You have Team Heritage that have like a World Cup community tournament, which is a team-based tournament, which is something you don't really think about in Gwent, because Gwent is more of a one versus one game. But then you also have, you know, this whole dynamic of nations and teams, which is an interesting approach. And then you have other, you know, more standard competitive tournaments like the Team Leviathan, obviously the Invitational. And then you also have some interesting tournaments where they just kind of bend the rules. Like I know Team Elderblood have done some very interesting, you know, more fun tournaments that have allowed players to try on different types of formats, different rule sets that maybe they've not really wanted to play. You know, the try hard tournaments, they want to just try some more fun meme stuff. They can also, you know, sign up for those. There's lots of variety on these community tournaments. So I think it's quite fun and interesting for a viewer standpoint and players, of course, as well.
Yeah, one of my most favorite community tournaments I did was the Scoia'tael only from Team Elderblood. I thought like those kind of tournaments are really, really cool.
If you like the faction.
yeah. I think they did one for like every faction too.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, I know Bandit Gang, something I actually really respect them for is they don't try and be this like super serious Gwent team, you know, we are taking this to the highest level and that. They do have competitive players and they do have players who play on the highest level. But in terms of the way that they post, you know, the kind of content that they tend to post, I feel like they like to have a laugh and, you know, mess around a little bit, have memes. I think at one point Denpai was doing a Jagras cosplay, for example. I don't even know how that happened. Yeah. You know, nobody consulted me about that. It just happened. I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. You know, good for them. Do you guys have any tournaments upcoming, either serious or not, that you want to kind of use this as an opportunity to promote and say, hey, community members, you should check this out? It doesn't have to be tournaments, but I'm giving you, you know, this is the plug Bandit Gang stuff part of the podcast.
Oh, well, we do have an upcoming charity tournament, I believe, on August 8th. I believe that one is people like were invited from various different teams to play in a charity event. And that's happening August 8th. Later, a few months or a month or a few from now, we'll have our Duel of Dogs tournament, which is kind of like our big competitive tournament. And for the people who, if competitive Gwent isn't their cup of tea, we did recently post our meme snapshot, which is on the website, teambanditgang.com. And what else can I plug? Oh, the YouTube channel as well. We do lore blast videos and various other content on that as well. So check all that out, please. Oh,
I love that like meme snapshot because there's so many meta snapshots. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm like, I just want to play something trash. Something trash. Oh, calm yourself. Something trash for something fun. And I feel like meme snapshot is exactly my kind of thing. I'd be like, right, I can't be bothered to make a meme deck. Let's just net deck a meme deck, change a couple cards, and you know, that'll be my deck from now on.
I think that's a good approach. By the way, one thing I wanted to add specifically to community tournaments, I've got a very very, I don't know, specific relationship with them. When I played in them, like before joining CDPR, I was obviously also a part of the community and streaming and playing in some of those community tournaments. And I think I played 3 or 4, and every single time I was so happy to make it to like the knockout phase, surviving the Swiss phase, and then winning the first game. So making it to the top 4 and then always losing the next 2 series. So always drop down to like the game of third place and then also losing that. And every time the top 3 got some rewards. So every time I just missed out on any reward. No rewards gained from those tournaments.
And that's why I got a job at CDPR. So he could give the rewards and then put them all on your account.
So I can now add those rewards manually.
All the rewards you could ever need.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I like it as a tactic. So I guess we should mention that the Invitational Top 16 as well, which Super Spock will be competing in, is this weekend. So that'll be taking place, I think, over Saturday, Sunday?
And probably. Sunday, yes.
I'm it's like, I just show up and cast. I'm like, just tell me.
It's birthday indeed. I believe it's going to be similar type of structure to the Top 16 for the qualifiers, official qualifiers. And it's going to be split up into 2 days. And we're going to be casting it. Various people are going to be casting it. You know, people, they got all kinds of all language. I'm not sure what languages all, but I know there's a lot of different languages. I'll be casting it. A lot of streamers, both English and Polish and Russian and one I think other languages too. Sorry if I forgot any. But yeah, that's going to be happening over this weekend, and that's going to be the big finale to the TLG Invitation, which has actually been taking part over quite a while. We've had, obviously, the qualifier stages, we've had the Swiss stages, and now we're going to have the top 16 stages. So it's been a long journey to get here, and it's finally going to get all wrapped up this weekend.
Yeah, and I think it's really good if you're a fan of competitive Gwent, because we've also now got the top 16 and the top 64 broadcast, which isn't something that used to happen. But this season, you know, we have broadcasts of the qualifiers, then we have all these community tournaments, and then we have the, you know, Gwent Opens and that themselves. And it also means that it's actually a great opportunity for people who want to try casting to give it a go. Like, I know a lot of different community tournaments have opportunities for other people to cast them and just get a lot of practice in. And I actually think that in terms of Gwent casting, it's at such a high at the moment just because there's so much variety out there. If you want a certain style of casting, that's there compared to in previous years when it was a lot of the same casters, right? And I mean, I was one of those casters, so I'm not going to be like, I was terrible. But I think that having this rotation system and having these opportunities for spotlight to shine on other people is just such a benefit because it makes the Gwent community feel much more broad and welcoming. Would you guys agree?
Totally, totally. Yeah. I think we're like super happy that we finally managed to just also allow players and viewers to actually watch those very high level games of Gwent that those qualifiers always bring. And I think people in the past have always been, I guess, kind of sad that there was no chance to watch the like the final of the qualifiers or even the final of the loser brackets of the qualifiers, because obviously it's the people that qualify to the event that they then eventually will watch, and that means that the level of gameplay is like on that level. And I think for players that are very excited about Gwent, that want to get as much Gwent content as possible, this is a blessing. You get to see maybe also some more interesting decks that are available right now and not at the end of the season when some of the opens maybe happen. And as you said, for casters, it's a perfect opportunity to show yourself also to obviously the people that eventually then decide who's going to cast the next open. Because, yeah, it's a very good testing ground. And as you said, not only the qualifiers allow that, but a very diverse range of casters. And I'm also very happy that you can now finally watch those games, at least for now, in multiple languages as well. There's not regular, so sometimes obviously a specific broadcaster doesn't have time, and there's always two qualifiers every month, so there's lots of content, and plus all the community tournaments. But you've got a French caster sometimes, you've got definitely Russians, they're always in the mix. You've got some Spanish people that are broadcasting, Italian. So all over the world, there's got people that are interested in the game and want to also increase the visibility in their own area. And I think that's what these community tournaments are doing a great job with.
I also want to add, like, I think it's also really good for like connecting. I think one thing that a lot of games just it's quite a difficult thing to do, but connecting the pro scene with the casual audience or the people that just want to, you know, they want to watch competitive action, they want to see what's happening at the very top of ladder, but you know, sometimes hard to do that because there's a big gap between someone that's, you know, just casually playing every weekend or so and people that are playing like 7 hours a day. But being able to like bridge that gap and bring them together and allow these players to see the highest level of Gwent on a regular basis, I think is really, really good, because it also just helps also teach people and people can learn how how to improve and how, you know, the pro players are adapting to the meta and how they're building their decks in these tournaments and whatnot. I think it's a very, very important thing that I'm happy that these kind of things that happen frequently to allow this gap to be kind of filled.
One of the things I always tried to look out for whenever I wanted to learn more and up my game was always like these high-end competitive like tournaments, like opens and stuff, back in like beta and even like early homecoming. And then now having the opportunity to see that for top 16, top 64 casts are also like great for anyone who wants to up their game, I think.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It helps for, I was gonna say, yeah, and it helps for community players in tournaments as well to see the decks. played, like piloted, that they could then, you know, choose to try in their own community tournaments. If we have these open qualifier broadcasts, it's more opportunities to understand the tournament meta, because the tournament meta is different from the ladder meta. So you're getting a glimpse of the tournament meta, which you can then use for your own craft in community tournaments. So there's this really nice kind of intersection that allows players who want to be more competitive and play at a high level to have a kind of a bridge that gap and help them to succeed. Because I definitely think as tournaments have gone on, we've seen so many new names coming into the community scene. Like, yes, there's the old names, there's the Pieables, the Colomons, the Tailbots. They've been around for a while. But every tournament, there's new players coming in that, you know, this is their first time at an open, for example. And I guarantee that many of these players will have participated at some point in community events to try and improve and get better. Shall we move on? Let's move on. Yep. Let's talk about a little bit about leaks. Not leaks. Okay, well, we could try and bully Ryan, but I don't think he's in a very giving mood today, so I'm not going to put too much pressure on it. But let's talk about the upcoming patch. I don't know how you say it. Is it Thaned Ku? Thaned Ku?
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's like, Thaned Ku, but don't call me
on it.
Can
you say the P? Is it coop? Is it like a chicken coop? I don't know. Like, I feel like CDPR just loves putting in horrible words for casters and players. I think you do that intentionally. You're like, we don't even know how it's pronounced.
Speaking of which, there are some cards in the square tall.
Really hard to pronounce.
Like, I just want to figure out how you pronounce salve anim, and I don't even know. As you see, I'm really lost. Animid? I don't even know.
I'd say it's called the new Squirtle gold unit.
that's where I'm leaning towards with pronunciation at this point.
Yeah. I feel like you could make a video or something that's just trying to pronounce the names of things, and then inevitably the comment section would just be like, you're so wrong, it's definitely this, and someone else would be like, nah, you're definitely wrong, it's this. It's like, well, ignoring the pronunciation of the Thaned Ku cards, what are people, should we say, most excited for? What are you most excited for, Spock? What's got you, you know, rubbing your hands in anticipation in the deck builder?
Well, I would say the new Nilfgaard legendary, I believe, the one that plays anything that had spying through the whole game. That's very interesting. I'm excited to see how that'll change the game.
It's a create, though, isn't it? It's not like...
Yeah, it's like an assimilate spy kind of support card.
But it means that you can't, unless you've given spying to three things, like specific things, you can't necessarily control it. And there's also that card that gives spying just randomly. It's like the Oprah of spying. It's like you get a spying, you get a spying.
I think you will get to choose. I'm not sure. Maybe Ryan can confirm or not if you, with that, with Terra Nova, if you can, if it lets you see all the spying cards you've placed during the game or not.
I'm 99% sure you get to see every card.
Oh, okay. I thought it was create for some reason. And I was like, oh, it's not that good. But if it's targeted, oof.
Mm-hmm, it's targeted.
Oh, boy.
No, that's an
interesting
one.
They'll playing their opponent's deck better than them.
it's a running team. I just want to mention that right now, we are at the stage of the reveal where we haven't seen Syndicate yet, right? And we haven't seen the final monster reveal. So if anybody watches it later, we might have not seen some spicy things coming up.
Oh, boy.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I mean, we saw some spice things today, I must say. I'm excited for this new monster card. This new monster card, that card looks scary, I must say. Very, very scary. And then also the elf guy, I can't remember what his name is. He looks like the guy from The Hobbit. What's his name?
Similis?
Yeah, Similis.
Oh, the one on the moose. The one on the moose.
Yeah, well, not the one in the moose, the one in the building, but I think it might be the same person, but they look similar.
I think so.
That card also looks very, very interesting. There's a lot of combos you can pull off with it. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for sure.
I think the Skirtel package is the one where all of the new cards, like the four new cards that have been revealed with this package, are working together the most, like out of all the factions. You can play all those four cards in one deck and like create a huge combo. And I know that Malegion and some other devs have like teased stuff and said, no, this, just watch out for it, but they haven't posted anything yet. But they did send me like a clip of like one of these huge turns where like everything pops off in the same basically turn, and you play like six spells in one go and revive stuff. And I don't know, you get so many points. And I know that it won't work out in every game, maybe not even every second game, because there's always stuff happening and people interacting, obviously, with what you want to do. But if it does work, it feels like old school Spellatel. And then you just finish, I don't know, with a 25 point gourd in the end and lots of fun.
Yeah, it looks like you can do some crazy things there for sure.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I like that the way the expansions have come out, that there's pieces that fit into other decks or can adjust other decks. So it doesn't feel like when we get a set of cards that we're waiting for more. You know, because that was one of my concerns about this new expansion style, that was that we were going to end up where the first set of cards came out and half the cards were useless because they were waiting on mm-hmm. other things. But I feel like the way that you guys have done it in these little kind of bundles is the bundles do have things that work together. But also have things that you can kind of slot into different other strategies and work really nicely. I'm quite excited for Rain. I like Rain as a mechanic just generally. And I like that we already got some more druids as well. And then we're getting mm-hmm. a few more. So it's also playing into Gedaneath. So I feel like Skellige hopefully are going to get this cool new kind of archetype with the cards that damage adjacents and all these kind of things. I think there's cool things you can do there. And I just like raining on people's parade generally. So I'm actually, as much as I badmouth Skellige over the course of my Gwen history, I'm actually quite excited for that set of cards.
I must say, Skellige got some good art this expansion. That that new Siren, it's like Legendary Siren, that card looks absolutely phenomenal. It's going to be exciting. It's always the best part when there's a new expansion coming up because everyone's trying different stuff and there's a lot of room for experimentation. That's probably like, I think everyone's most fun point in Gwent. Well, unless you're Kulamon, apparently he doesn't like new content too much in the beginning. but for the most part, I think expansions are just really, really fun because there's so many new decks and strategies to try out. And it also lets you be creative without like worrying about what decks you're playing, going, is this a good deck? Is this a bad deck? Because, hey, I mean, that's no one knows. So you got to go out and try things out to see what's actually a good deck and what's not, maybe not so good. And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, speaking of expansions, I myself was a bit critical of the idea of like splitting the expansion into multiple parts because obviously we're not going to kid anyone and nobody's going to think that we have more cards in total compared to our old system. But I must say, like, I'm very positively surprised by how it keeps the game very fresh every 2 months, and it really shows that you don't have to put in 70 cards at once to refresh the game, because even having like 4 cards per faction already allow other archetypes to change. And as you guys know better than I do, the meta can be very volatile, and if you change one card it can already shift so much because decks are dependent on each other so much. So I'm really for this every 2 months getting some really fresh content.
Yeah, I must say, I'm also, as a content creator, it's really nice because, before we'd have like these periods of long waiting time, which mm-hmm. would kind of be a bit, leave it at times where things would start becoming a bit stale. But now with the every 2 months, it really helps keep things fresh. And also with the balance changes, as you're mentioning, we get not only new cards, but we also get these balance changes quite regularly. And that also helps, shake things up a lot, and it definitely keeps things fresh, which is just great for players and especially content creators, I must say. Content creators definitely love that.
Have you guys seen the new monster card that was released like half an hour ago or something?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
It is crazy. It is absolutely crazy.
I'm still struggling to wrap my head around how strong it actually is, but yeah.
It's good in so many ways. Like, it has so many layers to it. Like, I was doing the math on just its base value. Then I was like thinking about synergies with like things like Caranthia and things like you could even play Idarin, and you could even go all out and play like Renew as well and play it 3 times. And like, there's just so many things going on with this card. It looks just incredible.
Yeah. And we finally got Gurney back.
yeah. I always love seeing the old card arts back as standalone mm-hmm. cards. Very cool.
But where's Dagon, Ryan?
Are we like, is it something that I don't know if you can mention, but is it something that we're eventually going to like work towards? Or have like all the old leaders like back as cards, like plan?
I mean, I think there's no, I don't think they're forcing them into the game. As you see, like, there were 12 cards added like a few months ago with the old arts coming back. And now there's an opportunity to bring back Gernikora. So I think when the situation arises where it's possible to fit them in, then they are definitely are going to take that opportunity, the designers and the art team working together on that. But I don't think we're going to create like a soul expansion or a soul drop just to bring them in like we did with the 12 cards. But obviously that might still change in the future, and what I just said might be wrong. But that's at least what I see right now.
But what about Dagon?
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, does that deny the possibility of a full Dagon expansion?
Who's Dagon, though? I don't know.
He's gone. He's gone.
Ooh, Dagon. Oh. No.
I think we have to wait a bit longer for him.
I think the Gwen scene is going to just explode on the day that we finally get Dagon back.
Yeah.
True.
Oh, dear. I feel like overall, though, I'm generally quite happy with how the expansions are working out. And I think it puts cards under the microscope, to be honest with you. Like, previously we'd get 70-odd cards and no, like, half of them would kind of just be overlooked. Whereas now you have to kind of consider every card in the expansion in order to really craft decks. And I think it means that even those cards that people were like, oh, it's a 4-provision, it's not going to do much, are seeing playtesting and they are getting tried out as opposed to being written off when there's so many cards to look at, which is a really good thing, in my opinion, for a competitive Gwent.
Mm. Yep. I mean, it's going to be exciting for sure the coming days and weeks, seeing how it all unfolds. And yeah, also how it impacts these new cards. What's also very interesting is I also really like when the new expansion comes out and then seeing the preceding tournaments right after the expansion, because then people are really bringing decks you don't expect. Like right now, if there's a tournament, you kind of know people are going to bring it. Okay, they're probably going to bring this faction, this deck. But when a new expansion comes out, you don't know what people are going to bring for these tournaments. People really get creative. And I think that's also another thing that's very exciting, to see how the new content impacts the competitive scene and how players adapt to it when it comes to like these tournament settings.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting you mentioned that, because I don't think it was an expansion drop, but I think before the community qualifier in March for the Invitational, it was the patch that they added Iced, I believe. And it was actually, they like, added Iced and then they buffed a lot of Line Pockets cards. So it was like really interesting to like build and figure out like what people were going to bring going into that tournament specifically. That was really a lot of fun.
In general, that's always... I think a balancing act between for the design team at least and our esports team, for figuring out, okay, how can we schedule this next tournament or next the tournament in 4 months to not interclash, I guess, with the release of a new expansion, for example. So it's, for us, it's obviously a good opportunity to promote stuff in the game as well. So maybe have the tournament right before the next big release comes out, so players don't have to adapt like in like 3 days of new content coming out to the whole new situation. And it's also not a nice solution to I don't know, have the tournament played on a different patch, because I feel like people want to see the new cards once they come out. So it would hinder the opportunity. It's like a last resort. But yeah, we prefer to have the content coming out after the tournament if possible.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good point for sure. Definitely makes it much more connected for the viewers to see the game that they're currently playing also played in the same format by the, like, you know, the pro scene.
I think it's also just one of those things where you can't like not update the game because of esports, right? Like, esports will, I guess, adapt. And that's where community tournaments are great, because sometimes it's really hyped to watch a tournament within a week of a patch, just to see what have people decided to go with. What do people think are good? And half the time, you know, they get it completely wrong. And half the time, someone will be like the messiah of deck building and be like, this is what you guys need. Here is my gift to you. I'm playing it in this random community tournament. So it's cool to see in that regard, just once the meta gets shaken up, how the tournament meta adapts. And because we're getting these expansions and then these balance changes so regularly, the meta is evolving so constantly that the game feels really, really fresh. And I think that's something that card games struggle with, is keeping the game fresh. And it's something that Gwent does really well at the moment because of this change to the way that we approach new content, which I really love personally.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it has like an almost different atmosphere when like the game is just being changed so regularly, because you have so much more room to experiment, so much more room to try things out. And it's just at certain points in the game when like metas become solved, so to speak, when every deck is very refined, everyone plays pretty much identical decks, at certain points everyone kind of knows the lines, everyone kind of knows how to approach every matchup, and everyone kind of just becomes very homogenous in a way, like everyone just knows everything, and it becomes difficult to actually like find ways to outplay your opponent, because everyone kind of knows all the ways to outplay at certain points. So keeping the game fresh and allowing players to experiment and, you know, find new lines, find new approaches and new tactics to work with really helps just reward players for their creativity, and also, you know, their intuitiveness to intuit, I'm not sure if it's a word, but intuitiveness or whatever, to, you know, figure out these metas, which is quite nice.
Actually, one question.
Oh, continue.
I just wanted to, while we're talking about like new decks, bring those up. Maybe to you, Spock, but do you prefer a closed decklist tournament, or do you prefer having open decklist right from the start?
Oh, I prefer open decklist. It is very nice to go into a match like knowing what your opponent's bringing. It also helps like allocating your own resources. Like, do I need to save like this answer for this? Do I need to maybe conserve this more for a certain win condition? I prefer that a lot more to kind of a guessing game that is closed deckless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would tend to agree as when it comes to playing turns, it's always scary if you always have to guess what your opponent could be doing, because it's nice to be able to play the game at a level where you both know exactly what each other knows, and you can kind of say to yourself, okay, my opponent knows that I play this card and I know that he knows that I play this card, so I'm going to play in this way and keep this for, as you mentioned, for this answer. And it becomes kind of like this whole game of who can outsmart the opponents the best, knowing under perfect information circumstances, which can be quite interesting for sure. I think, at least from a competitive standpoint, it does take a little bit of like the surprise of things, but at least in terms of like raw like player abilities, I think it's just quite nice to have open deck lists.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
I used to be a proponent like of the surprise factor for the viewing experience, but actually I don't think viewers really care. I used to think, oh, you know, it's exciting because maybe you'll get like a hype Igni or those kind of things. But having spoken to pro players, I think that they much prefer the consistency, you know, because it's about skill at that point. If you have more information, then people who are better skilled should succeed. And then on top of that, it doesn't affect the broadcast that much, I think, from a viewer perspective. And so it shouldn't really matter. And so this move towards open deck lists, I think, is actually better for the competitive nature of the game without really taking away from the broadcast, should we say?
Mm-hmm. I think we've always been under open deck lists. I think there were some times, and I think in open beta, we had the first round of opens were, I think, closed deck lists.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something like that, I believe.
Yeah, I want to say it's changed in season 2.
Yeah, I think
maybe
so.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I think with going to the online format after the pandemic started, we decided that it makes more sense to have open decklist right from the start, because it would make it a lot more difficult to keep the competitive integrity with closed decklists and going into the first round while having people all over the place and not like in one room. And yeah, I think that's when the decision was made. And yeah, I completely agree. I think I also prefer closed decklists in that sense. I mean, open decklists on that. Because also one thing I immediately think of when you say it's better for the broadcast, I love those moments. Like, some of my favorite Gwent esport moments are when casters say, oh my goodness, I think he just played this card to make his opponent think like it's a bait in some sorts or a bluff, because your opponent knows which kind of cards you have. So maybe you play a suboptimal line if you would play it like blindly, but play it in a way where your opponent thinks you've got a different last card because you're keeping it for last. So they maybe also do something that's even worse. And those kind of mind games, I think, really strive in open deck lists.
Yeah, it's also interesting when you have there's a lot more math involved, I think, in open deck too, because a lot of the times it comes that there will come down a situation where you've got to start calculating all your opponent's possible cards and say, okay, my opponent has this card. Do I beat this card if I play like this? But do I also beat this card if I play like this? And which is the most optimal line that beats the majority of my opponent's cards, and try to figure out exactly what their last cards are, and you know, do all those calculations and all those that math. And I think it's actually something that people don't necessarily always see when they were watching these tournaments, but in players' minds, it's actually, especially when it comes down to the last like 2-3 cards of a game, there's actually sometimes some really big math trying to calculate all the possible outcomes and what you beat and what you lose to and how to play around it. And that doesn't really become possible on like closed deck lists, at least not as much.
Yeah, I think there's also some players that do it better than others, and especially like we're talking to some of the pro players in interviews before the opens. I think during one of the last tournaments, I asked them like, how do you, like, if you see the rope running down and you know, all right, I've got like 15 seconds left and I cannot calculate all of the different lines, like, how do you deal with that pressure on you and how do you make that decision? And I think Life Coach was one of the people that said, well, I don't. I have no idea how to deal with this pressure. It's terrible. I always try to I don't know, just go with the thing that my intuition tells me in that moment. But other players like Holomon, I think they're so calculating. And he says that when like 30 seconds, the last 30 seconds start, he always tries to have a plan already set in that second. So there's no even a chance that he gets to any kind of time pressure.
I hate when I hear that timer come up. I'm already starting to panic.
And then I have to recalculate every line like twice to make sure I didn't make a mistake because of the pressure.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, some players I think are naturally better at it than others, and some players are obviously a bit faster in how they play and just try to just make their players decide quicker. But yeah, there definitely can be times where you have a lot of calculation. And as you mentioned, it's always scary because sometimes you make the calculations, you go, okay, damn, I actually want to double check this. But there's not enough time to really double check a lot of the time. And it can be kind of scary.
I think some players though will just kind of estimate, you know, this is on roughly worse than this without going into the nitty gritty. You know, you don't necessarily need to know that you win by 7. You just need to know that you win. So, you know, say you're just like, oh, I need 10 points. Oh, this is more than 10, right? Is this more than 10? What if they do this? So you can be smart about it. And I think, you know, eliminate certain lines of possibility rather than calculating them all out to the letter. But the problem happens when there's like so many engines on the board, or this triggers this, which does this and boosts this. And then you have to remember like armor, and what if it hits armor, or what if it hits a shield, or blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And you got to commend the players that can do that. Like, I was a caster, I was like, yeah, we don't do maths because we'll get it wrong. Don't
do it. I always want to do the math, but you never want to do it.
I'm always like, no, don't do the maths. It's not a smart move. Like, let them do the maths and we'll just see where the cards lie. But you can, to an extent, I guess, you know, say, well, this should be enough and not have to go into the nitty gritty. And I think if you can make those judgments very quickly, that can help. But then some players just slam cards. Like, does Cams really do the maths? You know, I have to wonder.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
What about you, Spock? Do you do the math?
Yeah. I would say, I don't know if I'd really put myself really in one camp or the other. Because like sometimes I do kind of just like go with my gut as far as like, okay, this is fine. You know, I guess it also helps when like the point deficit isn't like really that big. Once it gets to like, I don't know, like 20 some difference, I'll start to like think a lot more about like, okay, can I take in X amount of cards, stuff like that. But if it's a little bit more like closer, as far as like my score versus my opponents, I kind of just like, I know like the rough estimate of like ever like all my interactions, so like I can usually just slam in those instances. But once the point gap gets bigger, it's like, yeah, gotta get down and do some maths.
Actual math doers.
Do you think that players who slam their cards, do you think that actually intimidates their opponent? Your opponent, like if someone, you're against someone and they're absolutely jamming cards, does that put you on the back foot, or are you still quite chill in like your own strategy? I gotta wonder about these things.
Personally, I think there's a bit of my games to it. Like if your opponent just like slamming cards and it's like, oh well, they're just slamming, dude. They've got the cards to, like, take the rest of this round. They're going. But maybe if you like rope it out some more, maybe be like, ooh, I'm not entirely sure. Can this guy really do it? He's thinking a lot about it.
Mm-hmm. That's actually very true. I actually have this quite often where I purposely sometimes will try to rope or sometimes try not to rope just to try kind of place the mind against it and think to myself, okay, if I do this quickly, he's going to think X and Y. So I'm going to do it slowly just to make him think that I'm, you know, doing some difficult choices here or something like that. And there's sometimes some small mind. I don't know how often it actually happens, but I do have cases where I will intentionally just slow myself down just to play like a little bit of mind game or speed myself up. Like, for example, sometimes Cintrian Envoy, we all know this card that you put a card top of your deck, right? And you know sometimes Nilfgaard plays Alchemist or they play Location for an Alchemist. So you sometimes I'll deliberately go fast to make my opponent think it was an easy choice. I put a gold on top. So they more happily play their Location to play Alchemist. Because if I go slowly, they might think, oh, he's thinking about actually putting a bronze on top, isn't he?
Yeah.
If I do it fast, it kind of makes my opponent think that I was more just quick to put a gold on top. So
like there, that's the best card.
There's sometimes small little mind games that can happen with that.
See, I accidentally rope a lot, but the reason I accidentally rope a lot is because I forget to pass. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, why is my opponent not playing cards? And then I'm like, oh, it's still my turn. I'm like not intentionally slow. I'm just like, so they probably sit there thinking like, oh, you know, that person's really thinking about this or something. And I'm just like, no, I just forgot to pass. Like, I don't want to use my leader. Like, nope. And or like back when I used to stream a lot, I would forget to pass because I'd be too busy talking to chat. Like, I think as a streamer, sometimes you can just get distracted and then you're like, oh yeah, this card game that I'm playing, let's do that. and that's for me, the reasons why I rope, not for any actual reason. I'm not thinking about Gwent. I'm just, I like slamming cards. I'm going to firmly be in the camp of card slammer, but then I don't play as a competitive level. So, you know. I mean, you just are like, I can play 50 games in an hour and gain more MMR than you because I played more games. Like, that's a tactic, right? If you play games really quickly, then even if you're trash, you can still get an okay score.
That's the Ajikov strategy.
And the Brother Jam strategy as well.
That is true. So I think that'll probably be about everything we need to talk about for today. But we got to use this opportunity to once again mention the Invitational this weekend, which is sponsored by Advanced GG. And I believe that you can get a free sample for watching. So I'm going to do the sponsorship bit. In terms of the Invitational, we've come down to the top 16. So obviously we want Super Spock to win. Let's go Super Spock. Woo, woo.
Yes.
But it is this kind of 16. Mm-hmm. 16 players competing over the course of the weekend. There will be various casters involved as well. I know we've invited a whole load of people to cast. So if you're looking for some competitive community gaming, that is where that is. Does anyone have anything they need to add or want to say, or a leak that they would like to provide to the community as a CD Projekt Red representative? No pressure, Ryan.
I can say that just to clear up the rest of the reveal schedule, we'll have the two final monster cards coming out tomorrow. We've got two syndicate cards coming on Saturday.
Ooh,
and then the rest of the reveals will be on Monday.
All right.
Ooh. So you don't have to sit refreshing Twitter or Reddit. Like, these are the days. Keep an eye out, basically.
Is there a possibility of a patch notes on Monday?
I'll be upfront, probably not, because the issue in that case is we always try to provide the patch notes a day earlier, but with the new journey coming out on Tuesday, we definitely don't want to spoil it a day ahead, and it is connected to the patch notes in some sense. But there will be a developer video coming on Monday with actually Vlad and I talking about stuff of the reveal campaign, and there will be like a few highlights. I think about three balance changes that we'll do mention in the video. But the whole patch notes will be available on Tuesday.
That sounds very interesting. I'm looking forward to that.
Super Spock, do you have anything you want to add? Shout out to anyone, any of that sort of thing?
No, I think I'm pretty good. Follow BG on, I guess, Twitter, their YouTube channel, and check out the website.
And now we get to the best part of the podcast.
No, do you have any shout outs, Spiro? No, almost. Do you have any shout outs?
I'd like to shout out my mom, my dad, and everyone.
I mean, I like shout out my mom for opening the door partway through the podcast, and also my dog for barking in the middle of the podcast. Couldn't have done it without you guys. A real professional over here. But beyond that, you know, you can find us on all good podcasting platforms. So wherever you see podcasts, then you'll probably find us. Thank you so much to Ryan and Super Spock for coming on to the podcast and keeping us company as we chat esports, Gwent, expansions, and all the jazz. We are going to play the Invitational trailer, so the trailer for this weekend, as we close out the show. But before we do that, it is time to smile and wave, boys. We just look at the camera and we smile and wave. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll catch you guys next time. Bye!